Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN Sunday for Sunday, March 17th, 2024. And guess what? We've got another great show for you this week. The Legal Eagles are here to break down legislative litigative events. And Oliver Rennick from the Schwab Network is here to help us understand and make sense of these crazy markets. So sit back, relax, enjoy this episode of BRN Sunday. We're going to kick off the show with a look at what is happening on Capitol Hill. Here to help us do that, you know them as the Legal Eagles, but we also know them as David Levine and Kevin Walsh. Both are principals with Groom Law Group. That's an employee benefits law firm based in Washington, D.C. Eagles, great to have you on the program this morning.
Jeff, as always, it's great to be here. We are loving the move into spring. It's almost abnormally warm here in Washington, D.C., but it's great to see everything budding, and I'm sure there's a lot that's going to be happening in our world in the next couple months.
Yeah. And Kevin, I want to pivot to you because we're going to have a little bit of a different conversation this morning. We have often talked with you and David about litigation. A new litigation front has opened up around pension risk transfer. Before we get into the front, what it means or what it could mean, what's PRT? What is pension risk transfer?
Yeah. So Jeff, that's a great question. Just, you know, listeners, I think the key here is to think this is something that relates to defined benefit pension plans. And when a company has a defined benefit pension plan, essentially that company, you know, whether they make widgets or you know, services, they're stuck managing a pension plan essentially until the last participant or beneficiary, you know, passes away. Under ERISA, there's one other way that you can terminate a pension plan. And that's if you go to an insurance company and you use the plan assets to pay the premium, and you essentially buy an insurance policy, an annuity, for all of your participants. And so the pension risk transfer transaction is when the plan, you know, the plan sponsor says, we don't want to do this anymore. And then the plan fiduciaries go and they purchase the annuity policies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's something that's been going on for a long time. In the early 90s, there was an insurer who got into trouble. And as a result, the Department of Labor put out in much stricter rules in 1995. You know, fast forward, you know, the insurance industry has continued to develop. The defined benefit pension plans have continued to, you know, not be attractive for plan sponsors. You know, thinking about it, widget manufacturers don't always want to have pension liabilities on their books. And in recent years, we've seen, you know, more and more plan sponsors choose to terminate their plans and tell their fiduciary committees to go out and purchase one of these PRT annuity products. DOL has taken a closer look at this. Last year, the ERISA Advisory Council did a study on this, and you know, they did a report that came out last August. The Department of Labor consulted with them, and they're working on their own report. And now what we've seen is we've seen a handful of cases be filed against the plan sponsors and against the independent fiduciaries, you know, alleging for a variety of reasons that the process that was used for picking the annuity provider or the annuity provider that and that led to selecting the annuity provider was defective. You know, these are going to be cases to watch because, you know, pension risk transfer really is the only way that a plan sponsor can terminate a defined benefit plan. So if we see more of these challenges, it may force companies to keep plans on their books longer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these are in the early innings, and, you know, I think we're going to have to watch and see what happens in the coming months.
Yeah. And David, I want to bring you into this conversation because I feel like, and I kind of tee this up as a potential front, but nothing is definitive. Mm-hmm. Nothing is defined. And we don't try cases in public opinion. We try cases in the court of law. So there's a lot of fact finding and debate that has to happen. I want to get your reaction to this because it feels similar in some ways to the data debate that has been an open front on some of the litigation, right? They have opened up a new front. There's been, yes, a new front there. So anyway, your perspective on this, please.
Sure, absolutely. And I think, Jeff, your data analogy is a good one because the data lawsuits, despite the claims, and obviously I'm on the defense bar side of the house, have been pretty much wins for the defense. And why do I go there? It's because there has been a little in the past a litigation over PRT that also was, in my book, a win for the defense. So just because a lawsuit is filed, it's in a sense one side of the story. It's a plaintiff's story. Mm-hmm. But the reality is pension plans have been terminated and PRT done for decades. Mm-hmm. And Kevin really hits it well. Since the DOL put out its guidance in the post-executive life world, the system has worked very well. Is the defense side going to vigorously defend this? Of course. So do I automatically agree with what's being said? Absolutely not. But it does show that the evolving world of litigation, and maybe we'll have a whole discussion on litigation generally again soon, is just ever evolving, whether it's the forfeiture lawsuits, whether it was the, in my mind, really unsuccessful thus far attempts on data, or whether it is the old church lawsuits, where as well, there was a whole sort of cottage industry of lawsuits that were filed against church plans. And after a Supreme Court decision, those lawsuits basically have faded away. Mm-hmm. So we shall see whether these have legs or not. I would argue they shouldn't, but of course, that's where my bias comes from.
Yeah, and
yeah, gentlemen, I think the key is that the plaintiff's bar is always going to be creative, and you know they're always going to come up with new types of claims and see what sticks. And you know, in some areas, they may bring claims that you know benefit participants and ultimately lead to better outcomes. In other areas, some of the throwing spaghetti against the wall just tends to drive up plan costs in a way that isn't helpful. And you know, I think it's just a fact of life that, you know, where you've got large pools of money like retirement plans, you're going to have litigation. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to have to, you know, deal with this next wave and each subsequent wave after this.
I'm just trying to imagine the analogy of spaghetti against my wall right now as you guys are chatting. Gentlemen, we're going to have to leave it there. There's a lot more to discuss around legislation and litigation coming up in the weeks ahead. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we appreciate you joining us on the program this morning.
Thanks for having us on, Jeff. And thank you, listeners.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye, gentlemen. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Thank you. You too.
Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Well, time to take a spin around the markets. Joining me on the line, he's the lead anchor for the Schwab Network, Oliver Rennig. Oliver, thanks so much for stopping by the program this morning.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. Appreciate it, as always.
All right, Oliver. I want to start off with some... what I see is kind of mixed messages, economic mixed messages. Your thoughts about some of the data that we've gotten this past week kind of paints an interesting picture. One hand, some opportunity for the Fed, you know, good inflation data, and then on the other hand, not so good. So I want to get your how do you make hide or sense of this?
Well, you're right. It's pretty mixed. We had general softening in the data outside of the inflation data for now.
about 3 to 4 weeks. And the other side of it is that the inflation data has been hot. So like the core inflation data is hot, but the rest of the data is cooling off. So that's why it's not really a great scenario, because it looks like the strength of the economy has maybe waned a little bit, but the inflation data is like heating up. So neither of them are moving in extreme ways in either direction. It's not like the economic data are terrible. The jobs market, still solid, reliable, good. But a few things on the margin. We had a retail sales print that was light. We've had some regional manufacturing data that were light. And the economic surprise rate has dropped. However, the inflation surprise rate has risen. And the last CPI we got this week, combined with the PPI, but particularly if you look at the month-over-month core CPI, we are now very clearly trending higher. The month-over-month rate of inflation bottomed out last summer. So we can only really describe the inflation situation one of two ways: plateauing basically at best, and increasing if we use a six-month time frame. If we back out and use a 12-month, 18-month time frame, yes, we're still disinflating off of the COVID-warped highs, but the supply chain and the economy in the world feels about as back to normal maybe as we could imagine right now. And if this is the normal for inflation, then we have problems as it relates to the Fed and problems as it relates to the market's expectations of cuts. It doesn't necessarily mean we've got big problems in the economy until things really start to worsen, but it does present a challenge for anyone who is expecting a giant pivot from the Fed.
And you bring up inflation, and Oliver, I just want to, you know, oil prices, gasoline prices started trending back up, and you know, you think about, correct. So you got the macro that, you know, institutional people are, people that are looking and making these huge trades, managing big pools of assets, then you've got the consumer. And the consumer, we feel, you and I, we're consumers, we feel the strain of higher oil prices, which means vis-a-vis higher gasoline prices, because that impacts everything that we consume. The food we eat on our table, if we go out to the restaurant, or just plain goods that we pick up at the store.
Short answer is yes. Longer answer is it probably needs to worsen dramatically for a sustained high magnitude flare up in some of those basic input prices. What we're getting more right now is an end to disinflation. So disinflation really ended about 6, 7, 8 months ago, depending on kind of what metric you look at. We made a lot of progress off of the highs of inflation, but we're not decreasing really anymore. And so the question about oil prices and input prices and the connection between all that is still very much to be determined. But on the margin, it does favor right now the charts higher inflation. Crude oil this week,
yep,
traded above $80 again. And on the chart, looks like a real technical breakout. It had been flirting and staying under $80 for several weeks, and this week it managed to pop. And it did that while the dollar was rallying and firm and while stocks were down. That is a very strong sign, a very telling sign that there is momentum behind the move in crude oil, because that's basically what happened throughout 2022 when we were dealing with inflation. Crude oil was rallying even as the dollar was higher, which kind of violates your textbook trading assumptions: higher dollar, lower crude oil prices. The move in crude oil was so strong that it moved even as the dollar was going higher. We also saw that crude rallied on days where stocks were under pressure. That looks a lot like 2022 as well. More and more things here. The more inflation data comes in warm, the more it starts to look like 2022 in terms of relationships and trend. Not in the same magnitude, not in the same scary levels of inflation. And it also is not looking like the stock market did in 22. Of course, the stock market is generally in great shape. So we do have to separate a little bit out the worsening inflation picture from a more broad, damning view of risk assets or the economy.
Yeah.
Warming inflation is not generally good for those two things, but they're not at like a tipping point just yet. At least the charts don't look like it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Oliver. I was going to just ask, one of the drags that we've been talking about, you and I and others, presumably your own guests, commercial real estate, that seems to be kind of a drag or a potential drag. Any thoughts about where that stands? Because return to office, you know, there have been some really tough return to office policies, but I'm not sure that they're necessarily working. But there's still a glut of office space, a glut of retail space that's going unleased. Mm-hmm. This has a material impact on productivity, but also has a material impact on stock markets.
Absolutely. The question is whether or not we have adequately priced in the risks associated with that, because the companies and sectors tied to commercial real estate are generally underperforming the broad market in a fairly severe way. You see a lot of that in the regional banks. You see a lot of it in real estate and REITs that are just not doing very well. So to some extent, it looks like the market's very well aware of this risk. However, on the other end, if you get another big blowout move in rates, that's going to push the problem forward. But that being said, to me, it still is too known of a risk, really, to I don't want to downplay it, because there's a lot of debt that has to be serviced and paid. Some of it's been able to be refinanced, and companies have taken advantage of kind of the dip we had in interest rates from the highs. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of debt ahead of us from commercial real estate entities that is going to be onerous. But as far as the market impact more broadly, it seems like we have some pretty good buffer still, especially because nobody really expects these sectors to do well. Kind of everybody expects them to blow up. So naturally, the pricing of them has been very subdued.
All right, Oliver, I'm going to ask you the $10,000, the $25,000 question. Wasn't that a show? Was it $25,000 pyramid? Wasn't that the show where – right?
You remember that crypto question.
No,
Sounds like a Bitcoin question.
It was not. I was going to ask you. So, when the Fed meets next, are we pretty much we're not going to have a rate cut? I mean, that's what the market's priced in, right? But we could have one later in the year. That so I was not going to ask you a crypto question, which I
June
could.
June or July is where the odds. I don't mind. June or July is when the odds are highest. I think the Fed is really in a tight spot, though, again, because if Powell has any reservations, any non-zero reservations about making big moves during an election cycle, I know he says he doesn't. He's going to do what the data tell him to. The problem, though, is that the data right now are telling him that he can't really cut. later on in the year, maybe the data will favor him more, but then will he want to make a big move in the middle of an election cycle? I don't really have a strong feeling on how he feels about that, but just for the sake of argument, if he has any interest in, you know, avoiding that kind of timing, then it doesn't really give him that many options outside of the summer. But by the time June or July roll around, the way the inflation data is warming up right now, it might even be worse. Mm. So if anything, one might be able to argue that he should cut right now if he really wants to, because he could argue, you know, we've disinflated enough and we're on our way there. But if he waits another month, if we get another print higher next month for inflation, which it looks like we have a good chance of doing, it's going to be very difficult for him to argue that we're making progress towards his goal. So he may not cut this year. I generally am drifting more into the camp that they're unlikely to cut this year, because it doesn't look like the data is helping them right now. And it's just so hard to see, you know, into the future during election cycle what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, maybe he missed his window. And to your point, maybe he missed their window. Yeah. And the question
– if it was ever open.
Right. I mean, you know, you don't know – we don't know necessarily what the machinations are behind the scenes. People can pretend that they know what Jerome Powell is going to do, but only Jerome Powell and his staff knows what he's really going to do. So the question becomes, what will the stock market do? Oliver, we're going to leave it there, but you know where they can find out, Oliver? what the stock market's going to do, they can tune into the Schwab Network each and every day to check out yours, Nicole's, and the rest of the team's coverage. Oliver Renick, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, my friend.
Thanks, Jeff. Bye-bye. Have a good one.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN Sunday. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to, then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more, all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. And you want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Well, visit our website. And we're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest and another important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.